eyes jerk upward to mine. My fantasy blowjob has ended with a reality check. Obviously, we have less trust than I thought. I say,
it's not about trust.
It is about trust, I insist.
Actually, no, it's about claustrophobia. It hit me right after my accident. I was trapped in the car, and I just have these random triggers, and...
She cuts herself off and tries to walk away. I catch her and pull her to me, my erection at her hip. What triggers?
He used to turn me around like that.
She whispers.
I know it's you, not him. It's not that I'm with him right now. It's just these triggers that I have no control over, and I hate it so much. I hate that I'm weak enough to have something I can't just turn off.
My desire to kill this man grows stronger every minute. We all have demons, sweetheart. I have a clusterfuck of my own, so I'm going to give you advice. I'm going to tell you how to make that feeling go away.
SEAL training?
Most definitely.
Then yes. How?
Kiss me. Fuck me. Go to bed with me. She smiles her way into a laugh.
Is that right? That SEAL training?
It is, I assure. I recommend you try it immediately.
Then kiss me. Kiss me now, and...
I do. I kiss her, my tongue licking her mouth, and in that one stroke we're all over each other again, touching, tasting, wanting. I cup her backside, squeezing that sweet little ass of hers and dragging one of her legs to my hip. Her hand closes around my cock, and I'm not sure if it's her or me that presses me inside her. I'm just there in the sweet, wet heat of her body. I lift her then, and her hands grip my shoulders, but I don't thrust into her. Not here. Not like this. I carry her to the mattress, and I go down with her, on top of her. We have a moment where we just look at each other, and it's combustible. And then I'm thrusting into her, driving, pumping, my hands still cupping those sweet cheeks, and lifting her into me while she arches her back. We're wild, primal, and it's exactly where the fuck I want her. With me, and making these soft, sexy sounds that tighten my balls every time she moans into my mouth or against my cheek. She's here. She's present. But so the fuck am I. I'm with Sierra, not just some woman, and even now, driving into her, I register how insanely different that is for me. How insanely different she is to me. How mine she is in the moment now, when later she may withdraw. I want to keep her here, in the moment, outside her beast and her demons, and I force myself to pump slower, to calm my body and hers. I roll to my side and take her with me, kissing her as I do, my lips trailing to her cheek, her neck, my hand on her breast, my mouth on her nipple. I lick it, suckle it. And repeat before kissing her shoulder, her neck, her lips. I tangle rough fingers into her hair, and she breathes out, "Asher, please." "Please," she says. "Thank you," I say. I drive into her, and we're burning hot all over, wild, back to primal needs. But this time there is no turning back. We're touching. Kissing, moving, hungering for each other. And I can't get deep enough or close enough to this woman. Too soon, and yet just in time, she digs her fingernails into my back and tenses. A second later, she spasms around me, and I'm driving into her with the quake of my body, and that damn near rocks me. I don't even know where she begins and I end, or where I begin and she ends. Time is some elaborate scheme to force us back to reality. But it wins. We're suddenly out of the lust-filled, pleasure-laden bubble. Back to the world where the beast has to be named. But not tonight. I stroke her hair from her face and kiss her. I'll be right back. Don't move, or the wet spot is all your fault. She laughs.
Of course. Blame the one who doesn't have a rocket launcher attached to her body.
That's what you're calling my personal gear now?
Personal gear?
It's better than rocket launcher and hero boy.
I was mad when I said that, but I got your attention now, didn't I?
You had my attention the minute you showed up at the bar. I kiss her and pull out, walking to the bathroom, where I clean up and grab a hand towel for Sierra. I return quickly and offer it to her.
Thank you,
she says, taking it, and then quickly scooting off the bed to dart toward the bathroom. I turn to watch that cute ass that was just in my hands, shaking just the right amount.
I have to pee.
She calls out at the door, over her shoulder.
So do not come in here.
She shoves at the door, but it doesn't quite shut. Smiling, I turn on the bedside lamp and then walk to my dresser and grab a pair of sweats. Once I've pulled them on, I flip out the overhead light. I've just yanked back the blankets on the bed when Sierra appears in the doorway, wearing one of my shirts. Her energy and mood, 10 shades of sober now. The beast is back with us.
I hope you don't mind,
she says, indicating the shirt. I like you in my shirt, Sierra. I like you in my bed. Come join me. She doesn't move.
Asher, that talk.
It's nearly 5 in the morning. Let's sleep. We have all day tomorrow. She wets her lips and nods, crossing to join me. She climbs into the bed, and I follow, flipping out the light and pulling her back to my front. My hand settles on her hip. You okay?
Yes, I'm perfect, actually.
But she's not perfect. I can feel her thoughts beating at her. The beast working her over. For a half hour, I listen to her thinking without a word spoken. I lay there, holding her, making sure she feels safe. And it's an hour after we lay down, with the sun beginning to lighten the room, that she whispers,
Devin Marks,
so softly, that it seems that she thinks I'm asleep, and she's simply testing what it feels like to say his name. I don't reply. But holy fuck, there it is. The beast has been named, and he's the real-life Tony Stark of the world, if Tony Stark was a monster, not a hero. She's right about him. He's well-connected with the highest levels of government, here and in other countries. I know much about Devin Marks and the many corrupt acts connected to him, but unproven. And the real kicker? As a SEAL, I saved the fucker's life. A wrong I'll happily undo. My hand settles on Sierra's belly, where the scars of that car accident will never heal. I wonder now if they were an accident at all. Maybe even then she was targeted to die. But she survived.
Chapter 22 Sierra. I blink awake to sunlight and the scent of Asher, a heady combination that has me caving to the heaviness in my limbs and the call of more slumber. I shut my eyes again and snuggle deeper into the luxurious sheets and comfortable mattress and Asher, except, wait, I open my eyes again. Where is Asher? I roll over and my hand hits a piece of paper. I grab it and read, Downstairs, drinking coffee and working. Your shopping bags are all in the bathroom. I glance at the clock and read 1:25. My eyes go wide and I jolt to a sitting position. I slept until 1:25? No wonder I have to pee so badly. I throw off the covers and dash across the room to the bathroom, where I first answer nature's call and wash up. My bags are on the counter, and I open them and dig out a toothbrush and toothpaste and quickly brush my teeth. I open a drawer to find a brush that I use to untangle the mess on my head. I set it back in the drawer and stare down at Asher's razor and various aftershave products. The intimacy of being here in his bathroom replaying his words in my head.
Don't get close to anyone. Don't bring women here. Not to my home. Not to my bedroom. Ever. I tell women up front. I fuck. I don't fall in love.
He doesn't bring women here, but I'm here. He doesn't fuck women that he considers his duty. He doesn't fall in love. I need to make sure I don't foolishly fall without him. I pat my cheeks, trying to keep myself firmly planted in that reality. Images of the prior night start running through my head and working against that goal. The passion, the deep connection I share with this man, which is terrifying and wonderful all at once. Falling asleep in his arms had been... Oh, God. I grabbed the sink. I said Devin's name. I thought we'd be together when we woke up. We'd talk about him and what to do next. What if he's already talking to other people about this? We'll all end up dead. I turn to the door, and Asher is standing there, fully dressed in black jeans and a black t-shirt that contrast the bright colors of his tattoos. His broad shoulders fill in the frame, his blonde hair tied at his nape. His green eyes simmer with heat and the intimacy of the night before, while a cup steams in his hand.
"Caffeine?"
he asks, lifting the cup slightly. I have a moment that is an out-of-body kind of experience. I flash back to a similar moment with Devin standing at the bathroom door. He'd been equally as good-looking, Mr. Tall, dark, and debonair, in a tailored suit and tie. But he wasn't holding coffee. He was holding a jewelry box, because that was how he apologized for his verbal bashings. This time, I was a broken woman who couldn't even bear a child. Thanks to me, he would have no heir to his throne.
Sierra?
I blink Asher back into view, and I'm taken aback by how certain I am that, yes, he could kill, he has killed, and yet he is gentle. Good. He is all man, in ways Devin will never be. I cross the small space between us and stop in front of him, my body warming with the heat of our connection, the smoldering embers in the depths of his green eyes. I'd love some caffeine, I say, accepting the cup, the brush of our hands electric, and I am suddenly aware of my missing underwear and him saying,
I want you naked in every possible way.
I'm there, I think. I've been there with him since the moment I met him. I glance down at the cream-colored liquid in the cup, and then at him, the sexy one-day shadow on his jaw conjuring some rather naughty thoughts, but I still manage to say, what is this exactly?
Cream with a little coffee. I like it as sweet as I can get it.
And here I thought you'd want it so strong it grew hair on your chest.
Then it might grow hair on your chest, too,
he says. I smile at his never-ending wit and take a sip that proves to be a sweet, yummy flavor. Is that caramel?
Yes,
he confirms.
I have a thing for caramel.
He takes the cup from me and sets it on the counter before pulling me close.
And for you, Sierra.
There is something in his voice, or maybe it's his eyes, a kind of possessiveness, or anger, or both, really, that tell a story that I understand. You were awake. You heard.
Devin Marks,
he confirms, his voice hardening on the name.
I heard his name loud and clear, sweetheart.
My heart starts to race and I grab his arms. Please tell me that you haven't told anyone.
I told you I wouldn't. I haven't.
You also said you were going after him no matter what.
Yes, I did. I am.
He's...
I know who and what he is.
He moves on.
Do you like pancakes?
We aren't talking about pancakes.
Yes, we are. Because Devin Marks doesn't get to fuck up one more moment of your life, including breakfast.
He sets me away from him and starts to leave, but then pauses.
I had Kara do some shopping for you. The new bags are in the closet. Claim whatever spot you want to hang your things up, in a drawer or two, or whatever you need.
This time he leaves, and after a brief, stunned moment of processing, I race after him. Asher, wait! I call out, catching up with him at the top of the stairs while he is a few steps down. He turns to look at me.
Would you rather have waffles? An omelet? A hamburger? I love a good hamburger.
I can't accept whatever is in those shopping bags, I say. I appreciate you doing this, but I can't accept.
Nothing in those bags fit me, and I don't think either of us wants to see me in pink lingerie.
I'm too resistant to the way money and gifts can change us to laugh. I don't need gifts from you. He walks up the stairs and stands in front of me, but he doesn't touch me.
What do you need from me, Sierra?
More than I should.
And yet I define it as not enough.
His hand settles on my hip, and he pulls me to him.
Nothing with you seems to be enough. He doesn't get to make you live like you've been living. I won't let that happen. That's not how I'm wired, but I don't expect anything in return.
I can't take and give nothing in return.
Eat pancakes with me. That sounds pretty damn good to me. But then, so does going back into the bedroom and getting naked, in which case we'll be forced to eat Funyuns and drink beer.
I laugh. He always makes me laugh. Funyuns and beer?
That's about all I have in the house. We have to go shopping.
He turns me to face the door.
Take that pretty little ass into the bedroom before I take that pretty little ass back to bed.
He smacks my ass, and I yelp and head into the bedroom, laughing, something I'd almost forgotten how to do before meeting him, even before leaving the Beast. I told myself that was about the killers I investigated, the horrors I studied, but that was my mind game that I used to justify everything with Devon. I walk back into the bathroom, and more than a little eager to find out just what Kara picked out for me, I head to the back of the bathroom and flip on the closet light. I step inside the large walk-in space, my gaze captured by the rows of clothes lining the walls that seem to divide out pieces of Asher's life. The left side is suits, which are clearly expensive, with a row of drawers that separate them from blue military fatigues. The right wall is all jeans, t-shirts, jackets. There are so many dimensions to this man, so many complexities that I want to understand and know. My rules are broken. I'm here. I've involved him. I've not only looked him in the eyes, I could get lost in those eyes and forget why I'm supposed to be a loner for the rest of my life. My gaze lowers to the center of the room to count at least a half dozen bags, a Victoria's Secret logo on one of them. I sit down on the bench and start looking through each of them. There is so much here. Makeup, jeans, shirts, dresses, shoes, boots, bras, panties, even a flat iron and a curling iron. There is easily $2,000 in purchases here. Guilt stabs at me as I think of my first reaction to his generosity. My pushback that was all about Devon and his gifted manipulation, not Asher. Asher didn't do this to control me or to own me any more than he was when he changed my lock and bought me pepper spray, then taught me how to use it. I know this. Any other thought back there on the stairs was unfair to him. I need to say that to him. I will say that to him. He didn't just buy me clothes, though. He invited me to claim part of his closet. What this tells me is that he's also invited me into his life, while I've invited him into a war, without that being my intent. But he's in it now. He's not walking away from it, I know that too. He needs to know how dirty this gets, how deep it runs, how possible it is that someone in the Walker operation could be on Team Beast. And I know what I have to do to make that happen. Chapter 23. Sierra. Feeling the urgency to talk to Asher about the Beast, I shower quickly and dry and flat iron my hair, apply minimal makeup and a new soft scent. I then dig through my new items and hang some of them up on hangers beside Asher's fatigues, next to that part of him that is a soldier and fighter. I dress in faded distressed jeans after trying on several pairs in different sizes. I pair them with an emerald green long-sleeved V-neck sweater. My bra and panties are black. My boots are black Christian Louboutins with a red bottom. My hair feels soft. My clothes feel like mine, not someone else's, even though I didn't pick them out myself. No one else has worn them, just me. And feeling like me is empowering. I'm not hiding anymore. With that thought in mind, I rush to the stairs and pause with not just the sound of music, but more so to the sound of Asher singing Chris Young's Losing Sleep. His voice is whiskey-smooth perfection, and the lyrics bittersweet. Fall into me. Let me breathe the air you breathe. I can take you anywhere you want to be. I want to be here. I want to be with him. But more so, I want to do it without fear for him and everyone around him, which reminds me of my purpose. Tear down the cocky in him that might be driving him in the wrong direction. Give him the hard reality of what war means with Devin Marks. I inhale and start down the stairs, determination in my steps. I clear the wall to find Asher to my left at a high-top wooden kitchen table that is wide enough that he has 3 MacBooks in various positions and high enough that he's sitting on a bar stool. He grabs the remote next to him and lowers the music, his burning green eyes fixed on me. I stop in front of him, on the opposite side of the table that I don't sit. I mean to say something about Devin, but the way he's looking at me, all warm and wanton, has me backtracking. Thank you for all the things you bought me. I love them.
So that's a yes? You'll eat pancakes with me?
I smile with his unassuming humor. Thank you for that, too.
They aren't here yet.
I laugh. I mean, for being you. His smile fades.
And not him.
Yes, actually. He's a monster.
Good.
He says, his voice hardening.
Then I can't be the beast.
He's too confident. You're too confident. I pull the tiny recording device I've been carrying around with me for nearly a year from my pocket and set it on the table. Asher glances at it, and then me.
What is that?
He asks. A reality check you need. The doorbell rings.
That's going to be our food.
He says, pushing to his feet, but instead of walking to the door, he rounds the table and pulls me to him, his hand on my face, thumb stroking my cheek.
You checked my reality the minute I met you, but check it again and again, all you want.
He kisses me.
After we eat.
He starts to walk away, but I grab his shirt. Tell me you know how dangerous he is, I order.
I know more about Devin Marks than perhaps even you do.
What does that even mean?
We'll talk. Let me get the food.
I don't care about the food. My stomach growls.
Let me get the food.
Asher. The doorbell rings again, and Asher's hand comes down on the back of my head, and he kisses me, a sexy slide of tongue before he says,
Damn, woman, what are you doing to me?
He kisses me once more and heads for the door, while I silently answer his question. What am I doing to him? Quite possibly tying him down to get him to listen to that tape, and really hear it, if that's what it takes. I contemplate the many benefits of such an action, when the door opens and I hear,
What the fuck are you doing here, Blake?
And then,
Hey, Kara.
Oh, God. He didn't. He wouldn't. Did he tell Blake and Kara?
I deliver you pancakes and that's the thanks I get,
Blake demands. Asher apparently leaves him at the door because he's walking back toward me now with 2 bags in his hand. I stick the recorder in my pocket and turn away from him, pressing my hands back on the table and willing myself to keep a cool head. If he's done this, he's done this, and I have to head off any fallout. I'll deal with him later. The door shuts, and I can hear Blake and Kara murmuring to each other. Asher sets the bags on the table, and suddenly he's beside me, turning me to him. But I don't look at him.
I didn't say anything,
he says, his voice for my ears only.
I keep my word.
I look up at him. You didn't?
No. Okay.
I nod, and he laces his fingers with mine.
Come over here and eat with me.
He leads me around the table and pulls the stool next to his out for me.
Water or beer?
And just like that, I laugh. Water. I'll save the beer for the Funyuns. He winks at me while Blake says,
I'm in for the beer.
Oh, I love that green on you, Kara says, claiming the seat across from me and indicating my shirt. I knew it would look amazing on you. Thank you. And thank you for shopping for me. I love everything. I'm so glad, she says. Next time we should go together. A knot forms in my belly at the idea of forming a friendship. Any friendship. Something I didn't have time for between school and my internship. And even if I had, Devin screened everyone. He called it a necessary security assessment that I later knew to be all about control. His control wiping away mine. I know things are challenging for you right now, Kara adds when I don't immediately answer. Yes, I say. They are, but at some point, maybe, I'd really like that.
This would probably be a good time for me to speak up, Blake says, as he and Asher claim the seats across from each other. I was an asshole to you, Sierra. I'm not normally an asshole. Well, except to jerk-offs that deserve it, and that's not you. And to me.
Asher chimes in.
Where's my apology? Like I said, Blake replies, except to assholes who deserve it.
He reaches into the leather bag he's settled on the arm of the stool, and then places a folder in front of me.
Consider this a peace offering. That's your new identity.
He glances at Asher.
It hits all the hot points we talked about this morning.
I don't ask what the hot points are. I don't want any conversation that leads them to talk about me. I simply flatten my hand on the folder. Thank you. Sincerely. Is it live now?
Not only is it live, Blake says. I've got it set up to ping me anytime you get a search, which I can do on your real identity if I ever get to know that identity. I know,
Asher says.
Leave it at that.
Blake's gaze shoots to his, and I don't know what passes between them, but there's a conversation there, and once it's complete, Blake doesn't push me. He moves on, glancing between us.
Both of you look over the file and make sure you don't have questions,
Blake says.
But it's done.
He eyes Asher.
Your father's people already pinged Kelly Vincent. Of course he did.
Asher says dryly.
Good old Pops. And good thing we handled her.
Blake says.
I got it loaded 30 minutes before it was pulled.
What does that mean? I ask. Handled my ID? Asher turns me to him in profile to Blake and Kara, hands on my knees.
Don't freak out. Blake pulled a couple of photos from the Walker security cameras. He will not... I will not let it go elsewhere, but we had to attach a driver's license to your new identity. I doctored a few of them to create a high school and college history as well,
Blake says.
I gave you copies of everything that will pull when you're searched for in that folder. It was necessary,
Asher says. You can trust us, Kara adds. Whatever it is, I'm not a criminal, I say. Turn into them, and because this feels like it's leading places I don't want to go, at least not yet, I change the subject. What about the photo Juju took of me? I ask.
Nothing has changed,
Blake replies.
He hasn't uploaded it anywhere I can track, and I can track just about everything. And he hasn't left his house today,
Asher adds.
I've been in touch with Jacob.
That's his typical behavior, Kara says. He stays in until he leaves for the bars. What about food? I ask. Shopping? He has everything delivered, she says. Have you looked at his file? Not yet, I say.
Well, hurry the fuck up,
Blake says and sets an envelope in front of me.
That's your first consulting check in the name of Kelly Vincent. We want you to take on the Juju case with us. Otherwise, we'll do what you already pointed out as an obvious next move. Call in an expert. I didn't do this.
Asher says softly.
Blake is just an ethical guy. He does right by people despite the fact that he wanted to use you for bait.
Juju decided to make that a reality, I say. He's targeted me.
Which is why you take the job with Walker,
Asher says,
and you walk away from the bar.
I can't walk away, I argue. We've had this conversation. I'm not one of you. I study killers. I don't go to war with them. I laugh without humor. Well, not by choice. It seems I'm pretty good at getting their attention. Juju terrifies me. He does, but how do I sleep at night if he targets someone else and actually kills them?
I don't want you to become bait,
Asher says.
No, correction, I won't let you become bait for a serial killer.
I have a suggestion to help us evaluate Juju's intentions toward Sierra, Kara says, looking at me. You're staying here, right?
Yes,
Asher says, answering for me, his hand squeezing my leg under the table.
Sierra is with me now.
It's about as alpha and controlling as it gets, but then he does this Asher thing he does, and he looks down at me.
I want you here, Sierra,
he adds, and it is a statement and a question. I'm here, I say, offering no timeline for that reply. He hasn't had that reality check, and if he's as smart as I think he is, it's a game changer. I look at Kara. What is your suggestion? We need to know if Juju really is targeting you for multiple reasons. Is he really focused on you or not? If he's not, and we decide he is, we could miss another target. And if he is, we need to make informed decisions about how to ensure that he doesn't find you beyond the bar.
You obviously have a plan,
Asher says.
What is it?
I'd like to dress to appear as if I'm you, Kara says. Jackets, hats, I'll go in and out of your apartment. She looks at Asher. And don't tell us to go to Europe, and don't make me feel fear and guilt over my sister, who is with Kyle and all of Caden's men. I'm the only victim lookalike we have. I'm not leaving when a killer is on the loose.
Actually,
Asher says, focused on Blake, not Kara.
We're going to need you here.
Good, Kara says, ignoring the obvious undertone of something more than Juju that I know is Devin Marks. Our plan to have me dress up and move to and from the apartment works, but there's one catch.
What's the catch?
Asher asks, his gaze jerking from Blake to her. We have no reason to believe that he's followed her and found her apartment, she says. Maybe that is simply because he never goes to his victims' homes. But if Sierra doesn't go back to the bar, and he hasn't found her, he might then. Then I have to go back, I insist. We need him to stay focused on me, not someone else.
You're not bait, Sierra,
Asher says.
End of discussion.
I twist around to look at him. We have to catch him.
We aren't due back to the bar until Friday night. If he doesn't show up at that piece of shit apartment before then, we'll discuss what comes next.
His tone says we won't, and his attention goes to Blake.
Let's go to the balcony.
He stands up. Blake pushes to his feet and rubs his hands together.
Oh, goody. I always do love a good balcony chat.
The minute they walk away, Kara looks at me. I know you know that at one point Blake suggested making you the bait, but that is not what this plan is about, and that was not what it seemed. He was thinking of you as someone that was already bait, someone we could save while catching Juju. I am. He was right. I'm going to help with Juju, whatever it takes, and no matter how much I have to fight Asher over it. But my experience is where I'm a real resource. Once I look at Juju's file, I feel like I'll have more to offer. We'll protect you, Sierra. I don't think she's talking just about Juju right now, but I don't lead her any other place. You mean Kelly, right? I open my new file and start to read. Brunette with blue eyes, I say. Check. Except that you need to do your roots. I see your new growth. You're blonde. It's a stupid sore spot that shouldn't matter as much as it does. I'm brunette, I say, swallowing a knot in my throat and looking up at her. The file says so. I exhale and start to read again. I'm also 25 and born April 11th. I look at her again. At least I got younger, not older. Your parents were killed in a car accident when you were 8. This all checks out under inspection, too, just to put your mind at ease. The new you was in foster homes and bounced around until you were 18. Again, that all checks out. I nod and flip to a new page in the file, only to shake my head at what I find. No, this doesn't work. I can't have a degree in criminal justice. It's too close to my problem. Hide somewhere in the middle, Kara says. That's the point here. People who have to hide tend to go to one extreme or the other. Being too close to your past or too far apart is what gets you caught. The bar is actually dangerous. It's the kind of place people on the run hide. We need you out of there. The middle is the safe zone, I say. You're sure? Very sure. And Blake knows how to foolproof your identity. He does it for every walker that goes undercover. He doesn't trust anyone else to do it. Everything you're seeing is a piece of a puzzle. Read more detail. You'll see what I mean. I'm still not sure how I feel about that degree, but I glance down at the notes and try to take in the entire picture that's been built for me. I worked for a PI for the past 3 years, I say, seeing the connection to the degree. Is this a real PI firm I see listed? Yes. The owner is a friend of ours, and he only hires contract employees, all of which rarely know each other. The job will check out, and the story is this. You were working for the PI and crossed paths with Asher on a job. You two fell for each other, and we recruited you to our team 3 months ago. You have payroll records for both jobs and an active bank account. She slides the check in front of me. Take the paycheck. We need your help with Juju, and we'll pay someone else if not you. And this not only supports your cover story, it reinforces it. I shake my head. This isn't going to work. This cover aligns me too closely to you and your team. It's dangerous, especially to Asher. This makes him a target. It's what he wanted. He called us early this morning and asked us to connect you to him. Why would he do that? He knows what and who I'm dealing with. Don't let his sense of humor fool you. That man is not just brute force. He's cunning. He's sharp as a razor, and he will cut his enemy in creative ways that they never expect. He has a reason for everything he does, and if he wants to hurt you, he will. I'm reminded of Asher's father, and Asher's certainty that he could and would destroy him had he not gone into the Navy when he did. And I've never seen him look at a woman like he looks at you. Kara adds, I would not want to get between him and you. But Devin Marks does, and he's not just cunning, he's evil. Asher said himself I could leave when I had my new identity, but if I leave, Juju is still free to go after someone else. I look up to find Asher standing at the other side of the table, staring at me, and I know he's reading my mind. I know he knows that I'm thinking of leaving.
It's time to go, Kara,
Asher says, without looking at her. Kara sets a card on the table. That has my number if you need me. She stands up, and Blake joins her.
We'll lock the door on the way out,
Blake says, and they head to the door. Neither Asher nor I move or speak until the door shuts.
You have the resources to leave, Sierra. I made sure of it. Now you have a choice. Stand with me and fight, or run. Which will it be?
Don't say run like I'm some sort of cowering fool. I bite out, angry now. I'm not, but despite Kara calling you smart and cunning, you might not be. I grab the recorder from my pocket and set it on the table. Your reality check.
Chapter 24. Asher. Sierra punches play on the recorder and then grabs the back of the kitchen stool, as if bracing herself for what comes next. Your wife called the Riddell offices. A familiar male voice that I can't quite place says, but I know Riddell. They make military robots. She asked questions we don't want asked, the man adds. When? Another male voice I know to be that of Devin Marks asks. What questions? Today, the other man says. She called from a payphone, but we used voice recognition. She pretended to work for you and tried to find out when a delivery was going to happen. How the hell does she even know about Riddell? I'll handle her, Devin bites out. That's not an answer. It's the only answer you're getting, Devin snaps back. I don't answer to you. Wrong answer, because if the wrong people find out there's a leak, we're all dead. Make her go away, or they'll make you go away. The sound of movement fills the recording. Paper, clothing, shuffling. Do it my way this time, the other man says, clearly handing something to Devin. Use this. What is it? Devin asks. Poison. It won't show up on tests. It'll look like she had a stroke. The tape ends while my fury is just getting started. That's where I ran, she says. I was afraid to stay another moment. You recorded this? Yes, she confirms. He was working. I went by his office to get a check for a charity event I was coordinating. Everyone else was gone.
I was terrified, but I stayed that night. I assumed he'd need to plan my murder before he made it happen. I needed to plan as well. If I had any chance of escaping and getting my mother out of there safely, I needed time to get to the bank without him suspecting anything.
That meant waiting until morning, I supply.
Exactly,
she confirms.
And that meant I had to wait until he went to work. I had to act like nothing was wrong. Fortunately, he woke to some emergency at work and barely spoke two words to me that morning. The minute he left the house, I packed what I could, went to the bank, and then picked up my mother with 30 grand in my pocket. It was the most I could risk, what I could take without them calling Devon.
I pressed my hands on the table directly across from her. Where is your mother now?
I told her the truth and then put her on a cruise ship with $25,000. I wanted her as far away from me as I could get her. From there, I had her get off at one of the ports, an island with a low cost of living.
She gave her mother almost all of her money. What island?
Las Terrenas, in the Dominican Republic. And I was worried about her passport being tracked. But my mother proved resourceful. She met some man who got her a new identity. She never used her passport.
I don't tell her how common an escape path she's chosen, or how likely the beast will be looking for her and her mother through that route. Nor how dirty most of those island officials are, and how quick they'd take a payoff. Who was the other man on the audio? I ask.
He's your reality check. His name is Norman Casey. He's...
Deputy Director of Intelligence at the CIA, I say. The voice on the recording clicking now. I'm aware of who he is. What is it that you suspected you knew or actually do know, and about who? Aside from the fact that they plotted your murder.
It started with a few of Devin's phone conversations that I overheard, but didn't quite make sense. Until one did. He ordered the murder of a man I knew who worked inside his operation. I was in denial until the man had a car accident.
Before or after your car accident? I challenge. More certain than ever that it was no accident at all.
After,
she says.
And when I was still bedridden, when I heard him order that killing, his tone said that this wasn't the first time. I did my research and tracked a series of apparent accidents that I could tie to him in some way, shape, or form.
Why were you calling Riddell?
I started putting together a file of documents that detailed those people that I believed had been murdered and what I thought might be illegal sales of arms to foreign governments. I was trying to tie Riddell to Devon.
Do you have those records?
Yes, I do,
she says.
I wasn't leaving without them. I kept them in a lockbox in Colorado, but I took them with me when I ran. I got nervous, though, carrying them with me. I put them in a new lockbox in Dallas where I planned to turn them into the FBI. Obviously that went wrong, and I had to leave so quickly that I didn't dare go after it.
We have men there, I say.
I can have... No,
she says quickly.
We cannot have random people involved in this.
My people are not random people.
No, Asher, no, no, no. That is everything I have on him besides this tape.
All right, I say, holding up my hands. Then we'll go together.
How do you even know Norman Casey?
She says, changing the topic. And I let her, for now. I was SEAL Team 6, I say. We worked so closely with the CIA that we were, they are, often called the CIA's Praetorian Guard. She blanches.
You were 6? The 6?
Yeah. I was 6 and so was Luke. But neither of us want the attention that announcement gets us. That aside, sweetheart, what you just told me explains a hell of a lot.
What does that mean?
5 years ago, the CIA sent my team to Mali to recover a civilian hostage, as well as a load of weapons that were supposedly stolen while being delivered to our military. That hostage was your bitch-ass whimpering beast. Only he wasn't a beast then. We had to escort him through a hostile village where women and children lived. We were attacked and he freaked the fuck out and grabbed a militant's gun. He killed a woman and 2 children. She swallows hard.
Killer. He's a killer. I knew that. I just didn't realize he could pull the trigger himself.
With ease, I say. And without remorse. He said they got in the way.
What did you do? Could you do anything?
We escorted him to the extraction point, and I put him on the cargo plane that they sent for us. Once he was inside, I joined him, threw him against the wall, pulled my service weapon, and pointed it between his eyes. I proceeded to tell him that if I ever saw him outside of my duty, I'd kill him. Luke was the next on board, and he joined me. He repeated exactly what I'd done and said. Every member of our team repeated my actions and my words.
What did he do?
She asks.
How did he react?
He threatened us. He said he'd report us. I told him that he'd murdered those people and that was a war crime. But I told him I wouldn't bother reporting him. I'd just kill him.
And then what?
He shook like a baby. As well he should have. We all took our seats across from him. We left him in a seat alone on one side of the plane, and not one of us spoke. Not that we could over the engine noise. We all just stared him down. So you see, sweetheart, if he finds you next to me, and Luke for that matter, I promise you he'll think twice about coming at you. Because if one of our SEAL team goes down, the rest will go after him. All I have to do is put them on alert.
It's not just him,
she says.
It's the CIA. You know that now.
I get it. I do. But I have friends inside the agency that I trust.
Like I had a friend in the FBI in Texas? I did. That's who I went to for help. I knew he would know what to do about Devon. But he was Team Devon. He gave me up. That's what I'm telling you, Asher. Devon's reach is wider than you're giving him credit for, CIA and FBI, and even broader.
We have the team and resources to handle him and to take him down. He needs to be taken down.
CIA and FBI, Asher.
Royce and Kara are ex-FBI, and I will tell you that there isn't a naive or stupid bone in either of their bodies. They get it. They know corruption exists. We have the right team to beat Devon Marks.
I need to think,
she says, standing up and pressing her hands to her face. I round the table and catch her hips with my hands. Every minute I give you on this, I give him.
I know that, but by being here, I'm the magnet that could be drawing him to you, Asher. I don't doubt that Luke and Blake are good men, but they have families. I don't want them hurt, and one mistake, one trusted person inside your circle that's disloyal, will get everyone killed.
I need you to trust me, I say. For now, we'll isolate our trust to just the Walker brothers themselves. We'll talk through the risks with them.
Not yet. It's too soon. I told you I need to think.
I have to call my SEAL team and alert them that there's trouble with Devon Marks, and that means Luke, too. We need them on alert.
Not yet.
She curls her fingers around my shirt.
What part of that do you not understand, not yet, Asher?
Sierra.
You can't tell me none of those SEALs are corruptible.
I won't tell you that there is no SEAL that is corruptible. But my team, the men I worked with, are not. I would bet my life on it. I have bet my life on it. I don't have to tell Luke or any of my SEAL team that this is about you. I just need to put them on alert that Devin Marks may need to be dealt with once and for all.
Luke isn't stupid, she argues.
If you put him on alert about Devin Marks, he'll know it's about me. So I repeat, not yet.
Not yet. I drag her to me. I am trying not to push you, but not yet is a phrase I don't accept readily with lives on the line, including yours. We're going to have to get by them now.
Let go of me, Asher.
That's not going to happen. I'm all in, remember?
And what if I'm not?
Anger burns in me hard and fast, and I tangle fingers in her hair. Let's find out. My mouth closes down on hers, tongue stroking deep. She makes a frustrated sound, and that turns to a moan, and in an instant she's kissing me back, wrapping her arms around me, melting into me, holding on to me like she's afraid I'll escape. But it's her that keeps wanting to run. Her that I'm not going to let escape. I'm not leaving her exposed, and that's what she's about to find out. Call me him if you want, but I'm not letting you go.
You aren't him,
she says, her fingers pressing into my arms.
I don't think you're him.
Prove it. Trust me.
I do trust you.
No.
Yes, I do. That isn't the point.
I cup her face and tilt her head back. You have to let me do what I need to do.
I just need to breathe.
Breathe with me, I say. And I cover her mouth with mine again. And that's when I snap. When I want to own this woman like I know she doesn't want to be owned. But I need her. I want her. I have to have her and protect her. She kisses me like she wants the same, like she needs me, and wants me just as fucking badly. We are wild, hot, desperate. We are all over each other, touching, licking, biting, and it isn't long until her pants are gone and mine are down. I'm lifting her, the thick, hard length of my erection pressing inside her, all the way inside her. And she is tight and hot and soft and strong in all the right ways. I hold her like that. Our bodies connected, and she holds me. I don't know for how long, but with her weight against me, our bodies molded close, my need for this woman burns deeper, sharper than any evil she believed Devin Marks holds. She buries her face in my neck. And she smells sweet and floral, too sweet for the war she's now forced into, war that consumes and leaves no escape unless you fight and win. I know that feeling well. Well, she knows it only now. I understand that now, here, holding her buried inside her, I understand the fear, the anger. The need to make the right decisions and the fear that you will not. And the need to escape the pressure, if only for a short while. It's that need that has me pumping into her and pulling her against me. She holds on, panting next to my ear, and when I feel her snap, feel her slip into this moment with me, I lose everything but her and this. And I do not even know where we start and end. It's a whirlwind of passion and a near desperate grinding of our bodies until we are both shaking, quaking, trembling. I come back to the present with the memory of that recording and the man who is supposed to be her husband plotting her murder. With the memory of the scar on her belly that I know was that bastard's doing. That bastard will pay. He will hurt. He will suffer. I bury my face in her neck and whisper, "He will burn in hell before
before he touches you again. Chapter 25. Asher. I ease Sierra to a stool, and we both quickly put our clothes back in order. I'm about to reach for her when she steps to me first and jabs a finger in my chest.
You push too hard, too fast.
I catch her hand between us. It's necessary. It's about protecting everyone near this.
I know that. I want that too, but I know none of these people well. My husband, the man I married, whose bed I shared, wants to kill me. That is the kind of betrayal I've experienced, and yet I told you everything. You, Asher. Just tonight, give me a few hours to process that. To talk to you about, to breathe. Do you understand at all?
And there it is. The reality check she told me I needed. She's right. She's been cut and cut deeply. Even an FBI agent turned on her. I do, I say, my hands settling at her waist. You're right, I'm wrong. Let's breathe. And eat while we do. I'm starving. Are you starving?
Yes, I'm starving.
Good. Because someone once said that pancakes make everything better.
Did you say that?
I laugh. Yes. You're catching on to me. I kiss her firmly on the lips and then release her. But the minute I start to move away, she catches my arm.
I know we need to tell the Walker brothers, and soon. I just want time to talk through how that looks with you. Okay?
Completely fucking okay. What else?
Can I look at the juju file now while we eat?
I decide right then, with that turnaround and refocus, that going after juju somehow gives her purpose. Which I get. She needs to feel like she's doing something, and that something is good. It's the entire fucking reason I joined the SEALs. I kiss her temple. You got it. I release her and walk around the table, grabbing the file from the paperwork beside my computer and setting it in front of the seat next to mine. It's all yours. I grab the bags and turn to the counter. This may not warm up well, I say over my shoulder. But we'll give it a try. We might need to order something new. She doesn't reply, and I stick a plate in the microwave.
This is the entire file?
She asks. That's a big file, I say. What are you looking for?
More information on his family,
she says, turning in her seat to face me. I lean on the counter next to the microwave. There's basics in there, though I admit that's not an area I focused on. What is it you want that isn't there?
Just more.
She says.
Maybe it's here.
She turns to the table again and starts digging through the pages. The microwave buzzes, and I pull out the food inside, only to find it rubbery. This is not going well. I throw the food in the trash.
Juju is rich?
She asks, sounding astounded.
As in he doesn't have to work, let alone sell drugs?
That's right, I say, grabbing a box that holds my favorite muffins and joining her. He inherited a ton of money from his stockbroker father. I set the muffins on the table between us. That's one of the reasons they wanted me on this case, because I come from a wealthy background. Blake felt I might have some insight someone else might not.
You might. She says, if the right situation arises.
I lift the top to the box and show her the contents. Chocolate chip. Her eyes go wide.
Those are the biggest muffins I've ever seen in my life. They look amazing.
They taste like Toll House cookies.
Sold,
she says, tearing off a piece of the muffin while I grab the rest of it.
Does Juju live like he has money?
She asks, before taking a bite of her muffin, which immediately distracts her.